Arise. Oye, oye, oye. All persons having business before the Honorable United States Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims, draw nigh and give your attention, for this court is now in session. God save the United States and His Honorable Court. Please be seated.
Good morning, I'm Judge Castle. To my right is Judge Hagel. To my left is Judge Davis. We're here today in the matter of Turk versus Mansfield, docket number 06-0069. Will counsel for both parties please note your appearance for the record?
Antonio Mendezu for the appellant.
Thank you.
David Lowenstein for the Acting Secretary of Veteran Affairs. With me at counsel table is Joan Moriarty, Deputy Assistant General Counsel.
Thank you. Are both parties ready to proceed?
Yes, sir. Yes.
You know, I really don't know why we asked that question, but standard format. Each party will have 30 minutes to present your respective arguments. Mr. Mendezu, do you wish to reserve a portion of your time?
Yes, sir. I'd like to reserve 5 minutes.
5 minutes. It will be. You may proceed.
May it please the court. The issue on appeal is whether appellant should receive a rating higher than 50% for service-connected post-traumatic stress disorder. Appellant disagreed with the ratings assigned in two rating decisions by timely filing notices of disagreement. Thereafter, appellant did fail to attend VA examinations without good cause. The board then denied appellant's claim by citing 38 CFR section 3.655.
Did you say that the appellant failed to attend the examination without good cause?
Yes, Your Honor.
So that's something you're conceding?
Yes, Your Honor. The appellant's position is basically that the board misapplied section 3.655 insofar as it was supposed to rate his claim based on the evidence of record as opposed to denying it. Now, it was paragraph B of the regulation that the board cited for the denial. However, paragraph A has two requirements before paragraph B can be applied, one of which is that the examination would have been, or the non-attendance of the examination would have been without good cause. Like I said, we do admit that. However, the other requirement is that entitlement to a benefit cannot be established or confirmed without a current examination. And as the regulation does set that forth as a requirement, it is our position that the board should have discussed that portion of the regulation.
I'm sorry, is your name pronounced Mendezu?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor.
Mr. Mendezu. With regard to the second requirement, that there has to be a determination that the entitlement could not be determined without a VA examination. In this case, the VA apparently determined that it could not be. Is that determination, how should we review that determination? What standard of review should we use?
Well, as I understand it, it would be a clearly erroneous standard.
So you would say that that's a finding of fact that we would review under the clearly erroneous standard?
Yes, Your Honor. It's our position that the board's discussion of that issue did not suffice. insofar as the only insufficiency that was identified by either the board or the VA before it was that the evidence that was of record documented several psychiatric disabilities, both service-connected and non-service-connected, the impact of which an appellant's disability picture is not delineated. Now, and that's pretty much as far as the board went in its discussion.
Counsel, let me ask you a couple of questions along those lines. And let's accept for a moment that the board did not apply the appropriate sentence of the regulation. Accept that argument that you offer. But as I look at the record, beginning on page 14, the board goes through a fairly lengthy discussion from 14 through 15 through 16 and 17 regarding what it noted as the deficiencies in the medical reports, beginning with an RO determination. And even if we accept that the board did not discuss the second sentence of section 655, or in fact applied the second sentence of section 655 rather than the first sentence of section 655, would that not be harmless error if the reasons are sufficient as discussed in this board decision?
I think so, Your Honor, but it's our position that that the board didn't adequately make that discussion. Specifically, the July 25th, 2005 report of Dr. Cannell found in the record at page 419, we believe sets out to make the very distinctions that the board said was needed.
What's that cite again? I'm sorry?
The record at page 419, it's the July 25th, 2005 report of Dr. Cannell. The only discussion that the board does attribute to that report directly is by saying that it's reiterative and cumulative of the other reports that Dr. Cannell, the other reports of that doctor that are in the record, and summarizing that last report as saying that the doctor is just saying that the PTSD is severely disabling. But if you look at that report, it seems to set out to gerrymander those various diagnoses, even though it arguably admits that it's difficult to separate those diagnoses in terms of their effect on his total disability picture. And because that report is so explicit about the issue, we feel that the board should have at least given it some treatment.
Okay. I just want to get this clear. 3.655A basically talks about whether or not you can proceed, you need an additional examination. But B says what course of action the secretary should take. Is that correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
And your argument, as I understood your written brief, was that this was an original claim and therefore you should have rated it based on the evidence of record.
Yes, Your Honor.
And the secretary has an argument that this is because you were seeking an increase, he could proceed not to even write the claim, I suppose, is one alternative.
As I understand it, either an increase or the catch-all in the regulation, any other original claim.
All right. So then following up on Judge Davis's question, if we accept that this was an original claim and they should have evaluated on the record, your point is that the reasons and basis is inadequate.
Correct, Your Honor.
The reasons or basis for what is inadequate?
For the finding that that the evidence was insufficient to rate.
Okay, well, let me ask you then. If you look at page 16 of the record, which is also page 16 of the board decision, the second full paragraph there, the board makes a finding. The board believes that the evidence of record is insufficient for rating purposes. And that conclusion follows the paragraph before it, which discusses the fact that, at least in the board's opinion, that because there are multiple diagnoses given in the psychology affiliates report, there needs to be a differentiation between what is the disabling effect of the service-connected PTSD and the other psychological disabilities that are not now service-connected. And it's for that reason, it seems to me, that the board is saying that the examination provided by the appellant here, Mr. Turk, is not sufficient for rating purposes. Now, why is that not sufficient reasons or bases for that conclusion?
Because specifically the July 25, 2005 report, and to a lesser extent the other reports, Dr. Connell does set out to differentiate the effects of the service connected and the non-service connected disabilities on his total disability picture in some detail.
Of course, that's your conclusion, which I understand that you want to advocate on part of your client. But
yes, Your Honor.
If we accept your view of the standard of review here, we would have to find number one, that that conclusion was clearly erroneous, and number two, we would have to find that their reasoning supporting that conclusion was insufficient to support it or to explain it. Now, can you tell me why those two why we should arrive at those two conclusions?
Well, specifically, to cite Dr. Connell's reports, in the last report, July 25, 2005, the doctor says, "This World War II veteran is severely disabled due to his PTSD, and I find that his symptomatology of anxiety and depression, not to mention his alcohol abuse, are the result of and aggravated by this particular condition." He also discusses the anxiety disorder, not otherwise specified, and throughout his discussion of the various disorders, he uses language that sets out to suggest that all these various diagnoses are inextricable. That you really can't, and the board is assuming that these things can be separated when it seeks this examination. Now, the secretary can argue, well, that's what the VAU would have done, that the examination would have separated these things out better and would have told us whether or not it's even possible to separate them out. But he didn't attend the VAU, and the consequences for that non-attendance are set out in paragraph B of the regulation.
Right, I understand, but if the VA doesn't believe that in its adjudication it has sufficient information to make those fine distinctions, despite the fact that you, as an advocate, believe that they do, aren't they entitled to get an examination to try to clarify that? And if they don't, then 3.655 tells them exactly what they have to do.
Yes, Your Honor.
And if they believe, as is indicated by the, all of the regional office adjudication as well as the board decision, that the evidence of record does not rise to the level of 70%, couldn't they conclude that? That, in other words, 50% is an appropriate rating.
Yes, but I don't think the board did that, Your Honor.
So what remedy do you believe is appropriate here?
Well, as far as that issue is concerned, I think appellant is entitled to an explanation that addresses how the evidence does set out to separate, and also to and how it discusses the issue of whether or not these diagnoses are actually separable.
Okay.
As I was saying, the VA could have addressed this issue, but it didn't because he didn't because the veteran didn't attend.
Well, let me jump on that. The paragraph that you've just been discussing starts with the words "in addition," which means that it's in addition to the discussion above. And if you go to page 15, they state, first full paragraph, "In this case, an additional medical examination of the veteran is necessary." They then state, "The only medical evidence is X, Y, and Z." They then observe down at the bottom paragraph that although PTSD symptomatology is noted in the reports, they then discuss the fact that it's no complaints prior to this. And I'll come back to that in just a second. And then third, the in addition paragraph you just discussed. And then fourth, it appears that on page 17, the board is concerned that you and your client appear to be attempting to manipulate the record by providing only limited evidence. Is it true that your client did not attend the doctor's appointment by VA on your advice?
No, Your Honor. I never tell my clients not to attend VAEs.
So he just decided, even though he was there that this morning, not to go to the examination that afternoon?
I suspect his decision was educated by a discussion that I had with him where we explain that the consequences of not attending VAEs in light of Section 3.655, okay, as well as the fact that that in the years, the short years that I've been doing this, and the many more years that my affiliates have been doing this, whenever a veteran does attend a VAE, the chances of the claim being denied increases dramatically.
All right, but
especially for the issue of
after
PTSD.
After you discussed that with him, he then made a determination, you think, an educated determination not to go to the examination.
Correct, Your
Honor. All right, well, I said I'd come back to number two, the second reason the board seemed to give on page 15, and that was the lack of any other evidence regarding PTSD. And in your briefs, you suggested that that was irrelevant information.
Yes, Your Honor.
Isn't it true that VA is supposed to assess the disability in the context of the entire picture?
Yes, Your Honor.
Why wouldn't it be relevant to that then?
Well, our position is that the board using that silence in the record as evidence against the claim is the board basically providing its own medical judgment in the guise of its opinion.
Why isn't it the board making an assessment that it feels it does not have a complete record? In fact, if you look at the doctor's statements that you submitted on page 127, there's discussion of history, problems that the veterans has had since leaving service about going broke, problems with flashbacks that have improved, which indicates that previously he had them. Why wouldn't it be important for the board to have the full history?
Well, I think it would be important, Your Honor, but they don't.
Right, and didn't they use that as a reason to say they couldn't do a complete, that it was a information was lacking?
Yes, Your Honor.
Doesn't that then tie into their fourth one, which would they believe that in this particular case they did not have a complete picture, that only a limited picture has been presented by the veteran?
That may be the case, Your Honor, but that goes back to my argument that their explanation is incomplete because the only insufficiencies in the record that were actually identified was just the one.
That
you have multiple diagnoses, one of which is service-connected.
Well, what about page 15 at the bottom? There's evidence we don't have a complete picture. What about their discussion of the veteran not attending the examination and their belief on this whole picture that they're concerned they don't have a complete picture? If they don't have a complete picture, why isn't that a thing to consider?
As I understand it, their characterization of the incompleteness of this picture is this long period of time without reference to PTSD. And to assume that that is a fact that upon which they can rely to make a rating decision is to assume expertise in the issue of PTSD.
Why wouldn't you just take it at face value? They're concerned they don't have a complete picture, and in fact they cite to only two visits to a doctor that reference PTSD in an entire history that does not, although the doctor references symptoms that have been discussed in the past, and they feel like they don't have a complete picture. Why don't you just accept it for what they say?
Well, because to say that the picture is incomplete is assuming that the board knows how PTSD, veterans with PTSD, how they communicate, how often they communicate, how, you know, whether they report to their doctors, how often, and all the details and technicalities of veterans complaining about their symptoms. And we're saying that amounts to the board acting as a physician, as an expert, a medical expert.
Well, I hear you.
What would give the board the authority to consider the reports that you have proffered on behalf of, or your client has proffered in order to support his claim?
I'm sorry?
What would give the board, the VA, the authority to consider the documents from the psychologist that have been offered in order to support his claim?
Well, I would say that the authority is borrowed from those reports, from the authors of those reports, that as medical experts they have the competence to make those findings, and so the board can only borrow that authority to that extent that it is proffered in the evidence.
The 5125, which is a statutory provision that permits the VA to consider medical opinions, private medical opinions for rating, talks in terms of only in terms of a physician. Does that in any way limit the that statutory language and have any implication here?
It would be my opinion that it wouldn't, insofar as I believe that the word physician would be referring generally to an expert. And I'm not familiar with these specific reports, but I believe that the psychologist reports were reviewed and signed by a supervising physician.
I think in one case, my recollection is, a psychiatrist signed the report, but I don't think in the others it did. I don't know that it makes a difference. I'm just asking if you thought it did, and I'll ask the VA the same question.
Counsel, in some of the cases that are applicable to this factual scenario, cases like Fenderson and Shuck and Kowalski, the court discusses the board's reasons and basis explanation as plausible. And as I look at the record, I wonder if you could explain why you do not believe the explanations that are offered on pages 15 and 16 are not, quote, plausible, not a plausible basis for the board concluding as it did. And let me be specific. On page 15, in the first full paragraph of the record, where it begins with, "In this case, an additional medical examination of the veteran is necessary." Are you there,
yes,
counsel? Okay. "The only medical evidence regarding the veteran's psychiatric symptomatology emanates from the veteran's private psychologist, Dr. M.C. And it notes the reports of November 04 and January 04 that they reveal severe PTSD symptomatology, specifically noting that the veteran experiences intense flashbacks at least once per month, etc. It then goes on in the next paragraph, indicating that the that you, in fact, submitted the additional medical record of July of 05, and says, however, the board has reviewed this statement and finds that it is reiterative and cumulative of earlier, much longer medical reports. The last paragraph on that page, the board observes that although severe PTSD symptomatology is noted in the reports, curiously, the remainder of the evidence is completely negative for complaints of or treatment of PTSD. And then on over to 16 and so forth, these same records are notably silent regarding PTSD. If I understand your argument, this is not, in your judgment, a plausible basis for the board's decision. Is that correct? To require additional medical evidence.
Perhaps no, Your Honor, because whether it's plausible or not doesn't remove the appellant's entitlement to an adequate explanation of the board's decision, and the notable absence of discussion of especially the July 25th report in detail, to the extent that that report does set out, does explain what the board seems to be seeking specifically.
So the reference to reiterative and cumulative in your judgment is
incorrect.
Glosses over the details of that report.
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay.
Did you make that point in your brief, any points?
I'm not sure, Your Honor.
Well, I think at least to me that's an important factor, because there's an issue, maybe an issue. The board finds that there was no need to refer to the regional office for its consideration because it was cumulative, and I don't recall in your briefs you challenging that finding.
I don't know that I challenged that language specifically, but I believe that my argument regarding the insufficiency of the inadequacy of the explanation would encompass that language.
Well, can you point me to where in the brief you think that either your...
It would be pages 4 through... Oh, I'm sorry, Your Honor.
Are you in your principal brief?
Yes, yes, Your Honor. Pages 8 through 11 is where I set out the various Dr. Cannell's, the language in Dr. Cannell's reports that sets out to address the issue of whether or not these diagnoses are separable.
On page 9, counsel, let me just follow up with Judge Hagel's line. You indicate at the top of page 9, when the board dismissed the July 2005 report as reiterative and cumulative, et cetera, it failed to note that Dr. Cannell directly addresses the multiple diagnosis issue.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Could I ask you another question?
I'm sorry. Would you mind if I follow up?
Sorry.
But failing to note it doesn't seem to me to challenge that the board's conclusion that it wasn't required to send it back to the regional office for review, that it was cumulative. Is that incorrect, or?
I don't think I understand the question, Your Honor.
I don't want to interrupt you further. Go ahead.
Counsel, do you have any experience with the board accepting a private medical report as sufficient, or is it your position that the VA always requests a VA examination?
I just realized that time expired, and may have expired a while back because I wasn't watching.
Paul, do you have any window? How long ago did it expire?
Well, almost 3 minutes.
3 minutes. Well, we'll give you 2 more minutes. We'll give you a total of 5, and we'll add 5 if you need it. You have 2 more minutes. You may answer the question.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, Your Honor, in my experience, the VA and the board do find private evidence suitable for rating purposes.
So it's not your position that, as a matter of practice or policy, the VA always requests a VA examination?
Correct, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
proceed. We'll add the five at the end if you need it. You don't need to take it if you don't.
Thank you. Appellant through counsel has attempted to limit VA's ability to obtain a clear and accurate picture of appellant's service-connected PTSD. VA scheduled two examinations in order to ascertain the parameters of appellant's current condition, but appellant failed to report for those examinations. Instead, appellant relies solely on the submission of Dr. Cornell's reports in order to obtain a higher rating of 50%. Despite VA's notice to veteran and his counsel that the current private medical records were insufficient for a rating in excess of 50%. This court's case law, Schaffner and Kowalski, and VA statutes and regulations, and in particular 38 CFR 3.326, authorize and allow VA to schedule examinations specifically when private medical records are insufficient for rating purposes, in this case, entitlement to a higher rating.
Well, excuse me a second. Go ahead. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you. Go ahead.
It's the Secretary's position in this case that appellant failed to report for the scheduled VA examinations in conjunction with an increased rating claim. With respect to the type of claim on appeal, the Secretary submits that the facts in this case took
now,
on the...
Now I'm going to interrupt you.
Sure.
What type of claim did you say this is?
We believe that this is an increased rating claim. And if I can explain why we believe that to be
Please
the case...
Do.
The veteran initially filed the application for entitlement to service connection. The VA granted that at 30%. At that point, he disagreed with the rating evaluation. And that's been in litigation and dispute since August 03. After he filed the initial notice of disagreement, we rated the claim and increased it to 50%. And at that time, it was based solely on August 03 private medical report. The regional office, in granting a higher rating, acknowledged that the symptoms did not necessarily need a 50% rating, but given the benefit of the doubt and acknowledging that the symptoms were higher than 30%, granted a 50% rating. At that point, he again disagreed with the 50% assignment and has always appealed and acknowledged or disagreed with the assignment of the rating.
I understand that he is disputing, that what is at dispute here is the level of disability. But isn't there truly a distinction between an original claim, which has five elements, one of which is rating, and a claim for increased rating, where service connection has already been established, may have been in existence for years, and we're only now talking about, you know, the level of rating, and the most important fact in that case is the current level of disability, as opposed to the level of disability that was established at the time the claim was filed?
Yes, Your Honor. We do acknowledge that there is a that an increased rating claim is distinguishable from an appeal following an original disability claim. We're not just, we acknowledge that there is a one claim stream in this case, and that under a Fenderson analysis, there is one claim stream. However, because in order to grant him a higher rating than 50%, additional evidence is needed.
What about the review? What about the appeal? The RO makes a decision. The RO makes another decision in a statement of the case. Doesn't he get an appeal by the board? This is on appeal. The 50% was on appeal to the board. That's a second review. He's entitled to a second review, is he not?
Yes, Your Honor.
Well, what happened to it? It just disappeared?
It's in the board decision, and in fact...
Then it's the original claim, assigned 50% by the RO in a second statement of the case, or a third, whatever it was, that is now on appeal to the board for its review of the one decision by the secretary.
We think it can be distinguished in terms of one claim stream following an original disability claim and what's needed evidentiary, what's needed...
He doesn't need any additional evidence, correct? Nothing. He needs nothing more. He gets a review by the board, does he not?
He does. And if the court does find that this is an appeal following an original disability claim, which the court can find if it so chooses, based on the Kowalski decision, which initially discussed abandonment regulation 3.158, acknowledged that the abandonment regulation was not applicable in that case, and therefore found that it was non-prejudicial because the board in that case implicitly made a decision on the merits.
Well, in Kowalski, they didn't implicitly do it. They specifically did it.
And we would argue...
They specifically said, even though we think it applies, we're going to go ahead and analyze this using 3.655. Entirely different. There's no implicit.
We would argue that in the current case, similar to Kowalski, the board...
Right, but before you get to that argument, I still want to understand how you stand here and tell us that this is an increased rating claim. I'm not following you at all.
We think the facts in this case are more akin to an increased rating claim because acknowledging the fact that this is one claim stream.
Forget the one claim stream. Don't get confused. He got a decision from the RO. He got another decision from the RO. That decision that's appealed to the board. The board is doing its first review of the 50%, is it not?
It is.
Okay. Then where do we get into an increased rating claim? We need no new evidence. It's exactly the same evidence. In fact, as Judge Hagel alluded to, you have an issue of DAV and whether it should have been remanded because of the additional doctor's statement. Now, that counsel believes it may have been argued in the briefs. That's an issue. I'm really having a hard time following how you get to an increased rating claim.
Part of the confusion may be in light of the fact of when appellant through his counsel submitted the NOD and the RO interpreted the NOD, it was always in terms of an increased rating. So the confusion could have been initially...
Yeah, but why are you confused?
I mean,
maybe
confused,
there's confusion down there.
I'm
having a hard time understanding why you're standing here telling us that it is an increased rating claim as opposed to an original claim with a rating that is now on appeal to the board.
So
and
am
original
I.
Original claims are to be decided on the evidence, and that's your second argument. I understand you have a second argument. I'm still trying to figure out why you have the first one.
And so am I, counsel.
Let me try to explain again. We acknowledge that the facts in this case are more akin to an increased rating claim, not necessarily that it is, in fact, an increased rating claim, just because of the nature of what is that dispute. The dispute is whether he's entitled to a higher rating. And the only way to get that and to figure that out was for the appellant to appear for the examinations. And because the disability rating is in dispute, it's more akin to figuring out what's needed, what his current disability picture is.
I think I see where you're going. Let's just, for my purposes right here, he's entitled to one appeal. He didn't need to go to another doctor. He didn't need to submit anything else. The evidence that the RO rated this on was entitled to one appeal. That is the original claim that he had, and it was entitled to one appeal. So I'm satisfied. If anyone else wants more.
I'm not. Counsel, let me ask another question. I agree 100% with Judge Castle. While your argument is creative, don't you think this area is nuanced and complex enough without making it more difficult? I really, in the face of Fenderson, on page 125, where I will quote to you, and you are obviously familiar with it, however, the Secretary confuses the veteran's dissatisfaction with his initial ratings with claims for increased ratings. A claim for an increased rating is a new claim. Both the migraine headache and the left foot plantar fasciitis rating claims are, as a matter of law, original claims that were placed in appellate status by NODs expressing disagreement with initial rating awards and never ultimately resolved until the board decision on appeal. I don't want to beat a dead horse, but how can you stand there and make this argument in the face of Fenderson? Don't answer that. We've heard enough on that point. Go ahead.
Sure, the court would find that this is...
Now, I'm sorry. I will continue to beat this dead horse, at least in one regard. This makes a difference, does it not, because of the application of 3.655?
Yes, it does.
And the board... Let me ask you this question then. Do you believe that the board found that this was an increased rating claim? They decided this based upon the fact they believed it was an increased rating claim.
There's language to suggest that. However, an alternative basis for the board's decision, as was discussed earlier, pages 14 to 16 or 17, is that they also review the evidence of record.
But don't they specifically say this is an increased rating claim on page 11?
They do, but we would argue...
And don't they specifically say later on, I think it's page 16 or maybe later, page 21, they say that they must deny this claim because of the command of 3.655.
There is language to that effect, but
well,
the same...
Well, not just to that effect, that's
well,
what they say.
Well, let me just throw in, Judge Hagel. How about the conclusions of law on page 3? The claim of entitlement to an increased disability rating is denied based on the veteran's failure to report, citing 3.655. The claim for TDIU is denied based on the veteran's failure to report, citing 3.655. I mean, it's very clear the board at one point has made a decision that he's not entitled. And yeah. you presented an argument that, let's just move on, it's been rejected here. So go to your second argument, unless somebody wants more on the first.
I'm good.
Thank you. Assuming the court finds that this is an appeal following an original disability claim, 3.655 allows VA, when the appellant does not show up for an exam based on good cause, which has been conceded in this case, to rate the claim based on the evidence of record.
Actually, it requires it, doesn't it?
It requires. And in this case, the court should find that the board implicitly made a determination on the facts, made a merit determination. And in Kowalski, as I was alluding to...
Counsel, did the board correctly apply 3.655 here, B?
In terms of an original disability claim?
Right.
It did. Implicitly, yes. By discussing the private medical records and finding that the board could not distinguish between the non-service-connected and the service-connected disabilities. And that's, as you noted earlier, Your Honor, pages 14 through 17.
All right, but the second sentence of Section B of 3.655, when the examination was scheduled in conjunction with any other original reopened claim for benefit, which was previously disallowed, or a claim for increase, which there seems to be some question about here, the claim shall be denied. Did the board apply that section of 3.655 or the first sentence of 3.655?
Explicitly, it applied the second by denying. There's language, as Judge Castle pointed, that the board denied the claim because he did not, it was an increased rating claim, so the board denied the claim.
All right, but in terms of the board's analysis and articulation for its reasons, is it your position that that is enough to constitute harmless error?
Yes, Your Honor. And the Secretary would bring the court's attention, which I'm sure you're aware, the Kowalski decision, which found that even though, and I would attempt to explain to the court that an abandonment regulation is similar and has the same effect as the board did in this case by denying the claim. There's no review on the evidence of record. And assuming the court finds that to be the same or similar, the court needs to address whether that was prejudicial. And the Secretary submits that it was non-prejudicial because the board did make an implicit discussion of the evidence of record and found that there was an inability to...
I just have to jump on... Implicit or explicit? I mean, well, the board, 14 through 17 looks like it's an explicit discussion of the evidence.
Well, yes, Your Honor, that's correct. But the board does not specifically address 3.655 in terms of citing to that regulation, but the effect is the same. It's reviewing the evidence of the record. And because there was no examination to attempt to delineate
I'm sorry, finish your sentence.
Between the non-service-connected and the service-connected disabilities, the board in this case found that there was an inability to grant a rating in excess of 50%.
Well, where, in review, I agree that they discussed the psychologist's report. I'm having a hard time finding, as you started off your argument, you said that the issue here is whether or not he's entitled to a rating in excess of 50%. And that was your whole argument. We spent a lot of time on that. Now, you thought that was the issue of this case. But I don't see a lot of discussion here about why the person's not entitled to a 70% rating. In other words, why he's only entitled to 50%. I see a lot of discussion and concern about the guy not showing up, Mr. Turk not showing up for his medical exam and the potential motives behind that. And that's another issue. But I don't see a lot of in-depth discussion as you would have us say as if this were an increased rating claim, where they're making a distinction between one rating and another, and why the evidence supports one rating and yet not another rating, as, for example, the regional office decisions and the statements of the case do. Now, can you tell me why that impression I have is wrong?
I think it goes back to December 2004, when the regional office informed the veteran and his counsel what was needed in order to submit sufficient evidence to rate the veteran. There were two issues that were brought up in the December 2004 letter, and that's at pages 324. The two things that were brought to the appellant and his counsel's attention were, one, there's no discussion or an attempt to delineate the symptoms of the non-service-connected and the service-connected disability. That was one issue. The second issue was to separate and identify what the GAF scores were for both the service-connected and non-service-connected disabilities. There's no disagreement on behalf of the Secretary of the fact that GAF scores were submitted. That can be found in the most recently, the July 05 letter by Dr. Canal. What is at issue, and still is at issue, is the attempt to distinguish between the service-connected and non-service-connected disabilities. That issue has not been resolved. He's been on notice of that, and he's failed to report for an examination. The VA...
I understand that. But doesn't that those facts relate to whether or not the material that's in the record now is sufficient for rating purposes, and whether or not a VA examination, therefore, is required and an individual is required to report for it. Those facts don't relate, in my mind, relate to a discussion of why the individual is not entitled to a higher rating than 50%, which, again, when you start out the argument that that was the whole issue, sole issue before us.
I understand your argument, Your Honor.
No, my concern.
Concern.
I'm making an argument to you.
Our response would be that on page 16 of the board's decision, it addresses at the bottom of page 16. It acknowledges the January 05 letter, and before that it discussed the earlier reports by Dr. Canal and found that a 70% rating was not, that he was not entitled to a 70% rating. I understand.
Well, it says, since you brought that up, it says that under such circumstances, a 70% or higher rating cannot be awarded without further inquiry into the nature and extent of the veteran's disabilities. In other words, what they're discussing here is, hey, without another exam, we can't determine this. And what if we believe that 3.655 applies to an original claim, then what should be discussed here is why the individual on the evidence of record and the RO decisions below were not why the rating didn't raise to a level of higher than 50%.
I understand your concern, Your Honor, and in response I would submit that the regional office and the board agreed, and it's been at issue since 2003, they've discussed the evidence of record, they've discussed all the submissions, and that based on Soyini, remand would not be worthwhile. It would not entitle the veteran to anything other than if Your Honors wanted a more detailed description of why the symptoms in the 70% rating were not met. The appellant has acknowledged that he would
not...
That's
what we call an appeal, right?
Yes. The appellant has acknowledged that he would not report for an examination, so to send it back again to try to get another examination would be meaningless. It would not serve any purpose. And again, the RO has already addressed the medical records. The November 04, January 05, and July 05 reports, and they found that he's not entitled to a rating in excess of 50%. So based on Sugini, we would argue that remand would not be of any benefit.
Counsel, let's assume for a moment that the board incorrectly viewed this as an increased rating claim, or let's say it viewed it as an increased rating claim correctly, and they denied the appellant an increased rating under section the second sentence of 655. So, and let's assume for a moment that that was an incorrect provision to base its decision. Well, actually, that would be a correct provision to base that decision on, but let's assume for a moment that this is an original claim, and it should have looked at the first sentence of section 655. So the board has committed error in my hypothetical example. What is the appropriate remedy here? You just talked about remand not being appropriate, but if we have an error that the board has committed, what would be the appropriate remedy in this situation?
The secretary would ask the court to find that, assuming an error had been committed, that it was non-prejudicial. Okay. And similar to the Kowalski decision, that would be the basis for this court's
and
decision.
And it's non-prejudicial because?
Because the board made a merits determination.
And fully discussed the reasons for requiring another medical examination.
Correct. Sufficient enough for the appellant to understand the basis of the decision. While the secretary acknowledges Judge Hagel's concern of a more detailed discussion of why symptoms in the 70% diagnostic code were not met, we believe that the veteran and his counsel understood the decision and has understood VA's decision since 2003.
Okay. Thank you.
Yeah, but just because he understood it doesn't mean you're not wrong.
Well, that's why we asked the court to apply the prejudicial type analysis and find that the board's decision.
But the prejudicial analysis would not be, I don't think, he's not prejudiced because if we remanded it, he wouldn't go to a private physician or a VA physician in any way. Wouldn't the prejudice analysis be based on a determination that on the evidence before us he was not entitled to 70%?
Correct. Based on
that. So what do you base that on?
We're saying that the board's decision was non-prejudicial because it also made a finding based on the evidence of record.
That he was not entitled to 70%?
Correct.
And that's pages 14 through 17.
Correct.
The on page 17, the board also concerned that the veteran's attorney appeared to be attempting to manipulate the record so that only limited evidence, which they evidently believe is supportive of the claim, can be considered. Let's assume for a second that that is the only reason stated by the board, that they have medical opinions submitted by the appellant, that the board has reviewed them, that the board is nevertheless concerned, and that he's refused to go to a private physician, a VA physician. That the board is concerned that they did not have the complete record. And there's some other discussions about history and everything else. Is that sufficient?
Yes, as long as the board provides one sufficient reason for its decision, despite other issues the board finds, the board discusses and the court finds not.
Okay, so is it sufficient? It's the only reason. Is it a sufficient one?
It's sufficient, yes.
Why?
The board made a determination, discussed all the private medical records. It found that it was unable to distinguish between the service-connected and non-service-connected disabilities, and that is a sufficient basis for the board.
Yeah, but you're falling back into the third reason the board gave. This reason, if it's the only reason given, because they are concerned that it is limited evidence, they're not concerned anymore that it doesn't discuss a certain thing. They're concerned that it doesn't give them the complete picture. Is that a sufficient argument?
Yes.
Okay,
under 3.326, it allows the secretary to obtain a VA medical examination when the private medical records are insufficient. VA is trying to get a full and complete picture of the appellant's service-connected disability.
All right. What regulations call on the secretary to get a full and complete picture?
The regulations speak to private medical records that are insufficient for rating purposes and discuss the VA.
Which are what?
38 U.S.C. 5125, 38 U.S.C. 5103 Big A, D2.
How about regs?
I'm sorry?
How about regulations?
38 CFR 3.304, 3.326.
How about 4.1? Essentials of evaluative reading.
Yes.
How about 4.10, functional impairment? And 4.2, interpretation and examination reports.
Your Honor, speaking to VA's ability to get a full and complete picture. Is that correct?
Yes.
Seems to apply. Yes. If this court has no
further... I'll ask opposing counsel the same question.
If this court has no further questions...
I have the one lingering question I forgot to ask you that I asked to the appellant. Do you believe that the word physician in 5125 has any limiting effect in this case?
No, Your Honor. The Secretary would respectfully request that this court affirm the board decision. Thank you.
Thank you. You have 5 minutes, Mr. Reserve. 5 minutes.
I don't have much to add, Your Honors.
Why don't you answer the question I just asked? Is VA entitled to get a complete picture, and is that a reason for not awarding higher disability ratings?
The VA is entitled to get a complete picture, Your Honor, but that entitlement does not diminish or erase appellant's entitlement to an adequate explanation of the board's decision.
I have a couple questions related to Mr. Turk's non-attendance of the examination and your communication to the VA regarding why he could not attend. In your communication to the VA regarding his inability to attend the medical exam at Grand Island, you indicated several objective reasons why he could not be there: his age, his automobile, and various things. Yet he in fact did attend examinations on the very day that his psychiatric exam was not or was scheduled. Now, can you explain to me the discrepancies between the representation that you made to the regional office and Mr. Turk's attendance at that medical facility on that day?
I can't explain my client's represented reasons conflicting with what he actually did when we discussed the issue. Specifically the regulation, the meaning of the phrase good cause, I can't recall right now that conversation, but the reasons set forth in that communication would have been communicated to me by my client, and or at least confirmed to me by my client. And what he does after that,
well, it just seems the record seems to indicate that he attended other examinations at Grand Island also. He was treated there. What was it that made you believe that he could not attend the psychiatric exam? That made you make those representations to the RO?
It would be conversations with the client, confirming whether or not those reasons were true, and asking for any other reasons that he might have for not being able to attend.
So, for example, your client may not have told you he was there that morning.
Correct.
Counsel, there is, and I'll basically continue Judge Hagel's line of questioning in this area. There is a matter that troubles me a bit here. Well, I shouldn't say a bit. It troubles me a great deal. And that's the board's determinations. Let me just quote a couple of sentences. On page 17 and 18, the board is also concerned that the veteran and his attorney appear to be attempting to manipulate the record so that only limited evidence, which they evidently believe is supportive of the claim, can be considered. On page 18, the board further notes that this is not the first time the veteran's attorney has instructed a client to not report for a VA examination on the basis that the private medical evidence by itself was sufficient to decide the claim. And then the board goes on to cite Kowalski, which you argued as well. The same attorney presented similar argument to the effect that the private medical examination the veteran submitted was sufficient. And I appreciate your representations here today, but I am concerned and hope that we don't revisit this issue in the future regarding allegations. And I'm not certain where the board is basing this conclusion, or what the board is basing its conclusion on, but it does trouble me that the board has gone so far as to say in its decision that it believes you are manipulating the record and advising your clients not to show up.
Your Honor, I've never advised a client not to show up to an examination. I have.
All right, let me just say we're out of time. Would you like him to respond?
Yes, please.
All right, we'll give you 30 seconds to respond.
My colleagues and I have observed the different results when VA examinations are part of the record, and we educate our clients regarding that before Kowalski, specifically in light of Section 3.655. Since Kowalski, we've decided that it's too risky.
Thank you.
Thank you. The case will be submitted. We'll come down and greet counsel.
This honorable court is adjourned.